Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, July 8th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by iPad Today. Find out why TNT is so late today and get the latest iPad news every Thursday on iPad Today at live.twit.tv. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
On the board is our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you and try to make some sense of it all. And we're going to start off with some breaking news that just came across the wire. Comcast P2P settlement now final. And you, my friends, if you were a Comcast subscriber between April 1st, 2006 and December 31st, 2008.
You're rich.
Get $16.
Yes. Yes.
That's 1-6.
That's right. That is 1,600 cents.
That's right.
All for you to spend wherever you want. This is Hart versus Comcast.
Because that's definitely, $16 is definitely representative of the amount of money that would have been worth for your throttling back of any use of BitTorrent or other file sharing services.
Yes, I only paid $50 a month for 3 years, and I got my $16.
Yep. Well, it was $16 worth of pain when your BitTorrent was throttled.
There has been a revolt on this $16 issue, though. Eric makes a good point. One of the people who was involved in the settlement said, $16 compared to that $50 a month, I ain't accepting that. That's not good enough. And he asked other people to opt out of the whole settlement, and 6 people complained, and 143 people said, I don't want my $16. Everybody else, sign up for your $16 now.
And so, yeah, this would have been solved a lot earlier if it weren't for the people saying, you know what? I think I need more than $16. And the folks going, shut up, take the $16. You're not going to get anything else.
And I think there was one of those 6 people who actually recanted and said, oh, never mind, I'll take the $16 after all.
Yeah, exactly. And that has been the advice from the attorneys anyway, who they do case law, get these kind of cases, because they make bank on doing class action lawsuits. But they said, look, you either get $16 or you get nothing. You might as well take the $16 since the settlement is done, rather than let Comcast keep any money.
Easy for them to say. The attorneys walked away with $3 million from the whole thing. But
that's,
you know,
That $3 million, that's all. That's awful.
It's terrible. It's a crime. They should just complain or just object. But Tom, do you think anything long-standing from this, precedent-setting, meh?
I don't know. It does at least break towards the consumer partially. Let's forget the amount. It says you were suffering harm. You were trying to use a protocol that is a legal protocol. We're not talking about what you used it for. You can use BitTorrent for plenty of legal things, and Comcast, you know, didn't let you know that they were going to do this when you signed up, so it was your damage. However, on the other side of this, the FCC, which punished Comcast for this protocol, actually has lost their court case that says that they can't punish Comcast for this protocol. So Comcast could probably do it again. The fact of the matter is, after all of this publicity, I have a feeling Comcast is probably your safest bet in not having BitTorrent track or shaped for a while anyway.
That makes sense.
YouTube is trying to be a little more like TV with something called Lean Back. You go to youtube.com/leanback.
And lean back.
Exactly. You don't have to press play. It just uses your preferences, your browsing history, the things you've subscribed to, and plays videos for you one after the other without you ever having to intervene.
Which is great.
If you like LOL cats, you'll love, is that sort of the precedent that you're, the idea of how they're suggesting videos for you?
Yeah, I think the idea is if I want to get people to watch YouTube on the big screen, either from the forthcoming Google box that's going to come out from Logitech or on Apple TV or over a cable box or whatever, I need to make it easy. Yep. And what's easier than saying, turn on the YouTube channel? and just let it play and see what comes on next. This is actually reminds me of current TV.
It is a little bit dangerous, though, because it's not being filtered by anything.
It's
an algorithm.
For you. Though.
For you. Yeah, I was looking through mine, and it went from this wonderful science video about chemistry, and another video about evolution, and then tampons.
Tampons.
Then a video about tampons, and I was not interested in the tampon video.
It guessed wrong once.
What'd you get, Tom? What'd you get?
Mostly tampons. No, I got lots of videos uploaded by my wife. Several videos from the Queen's channel, Queen Elizabeth's channel, and a lot of videos from NASA.
Oh, yeah. So it's
well-rounded.
It's definitely profiling us, and that's where I'm a little concerned about the first video that came up for me. You ready for this?
Ready.
Can you hear this?
Ice baby. Ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding. Wait, that's the music video for Vanilla Ice?
That's what it played.
Yeah, so this thing works pretty well. It really nails everyone's personality.
It really gets people. Yeah.
You like science and are a woman.
Yes, there we go.
I like the Queen and NASA. And Becky obviously is a huge Vanilla Ice fan. We all know that.
Stop. Collaborate and listen.
I love it. Love it.
So anyway, it's kind of fun to play around with. Check it out, youtube.com/leanback. Now, Warren Buffett today recently sat down with the Huffington Post and Yahoo News to answer some questions. What was this about, Becky?
He's at this big summit for new media and old media, billionaires and millionaires and basically rich dudes. And when Willow Bay asked him a bunch of questions about what technology he uses, I think he accidentally endorsed YouTube Leanback. Hear what he has to say.
I may go there to listen to Frank Sinatra say my way, and there'll be about eight different versions of it probably, and I'll click on that, but then I'll see eight other things on the side, and Sinatra doing something else or whatever, and an hour, 2 hours will go by, and I'm having the time of my life. I like to see Tina Fey do Sarah Palin too. I'll go and type that in.
I love it. He completely admits this is a guy who says he just got a cell phone. He hasn't used any social media sites. He's basically says I'm tech illiterate, but I love YouTube.
He's describing what we've all experienced on the internet, where you start looking for something in particular and you get sidetracked into this link and that link and checking this email and playing this video until you forgot why you entered the room in the first place.
Yep. Surf away.
Yeah.
Now, I should mention that this conference that Buffett's at is just the epic schmooze fest for all these rich dudes. And there's some really interesting stuff coming out of it. Larry Page, Eric Schmidt, old media guys like Les Moonves and Bob Iger from CBS and Disney, respectively. And what's interesting is there were pictures of all these people interacting and watching Bob Iger sitting down with Mark Zuckerberg. I just would love to have been a fly on the wall listening to that conversation.
So let me get this straight. How do you make your money again? On stealing people's privacy?
No,
we tried that at Disney.
It's the advertisements.
Yeah, we used to do full x-ray scans of people when they came into Disney World.
We tried that. The Pandora radio guy was there, and he kind of looked
Mark
like...
Oh, Mark Westergren, yeah.
Yeah, he looked like the most hopeful guy there, like, I'm definitely not the richest dude here, but I want to be.
Also, in other YouTube news today, mobile YouTube is out now in HTML5, and YouTube is even touting that it's better than the app that Apple provides or the one on Android. So we're gonna do a little test here. We'll start with the iPhone. Eric's got his iPhone 4. And you've got the YouTube app launched up?
Yes, I do.
All right. And I've got the new m.youtube.com page. And so we'll do a little flip back and forth here. Maybe I'll hold it up to Kiki's camera.
That's right. Just put it up to my camera.
Oh, it's out of focus if I do that.
Here, I'll hold it in front of my face.
I got the ISO over here if you want it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. I'm going to start playing it here.
I can just be an iPhone face.
And we'll hold them next to each other right there.
I'm not sure what this is going to show.
Side by side.
First of all, the mobile version launched
already
faster.
Launched.
Yeah, I think you got to hit the play button on yours.
Ah, that would help.
There you go.
Still faster.
Yeah. It's They both kind of hit a wall.
They did.
But those still images look pretty good.
Yeah. Well, here, you can take a look at the differences in the search results page and what you get. I think this is the mobile one on the left here, and it doesn't really show you... Okay, there it is. So, actually, I forgot which phone is which now. They're both the exact same phone. Okay, I think mine's on the left. But I'll tell you what I noticed about the difference, though. So, by the way, Becky, your hair is ruffling on the microphone quite a bit. We're getting static. The YouTube guy said that iPhone users will want to download just go to the m.youtube.com because you'll get higher quality videos over the air, over 3G and over Edge. And that is true. The whether you're on 3G or Edge, the quality on Apple's app is much lower. It's like 15 frames a second, very pixelated. However, if you're on Wi-Fi, the maximum quality you can get on an iPhone 4 appears to be HD on the iPhone 4. It seems to be downloading the 720p version when I did some testing.
On your app or on the mobile version?
Apple is doing it. Compared to m.youtube.com on Wi-Fi, only gives you the standard definition version.
All right, and we got the Android versions as well. So Kiki's got the Droid, and you've got the app
I've got the app going.
All right, and then yeah. Becky, you've got the Evo with the...
I've got the Evo, and the big statement about the Evo is that in the YouTube app here, it's playing high-quality videos, which you still can't do even through the browser in the m.youtube option for the iPhone. And when I compared just this within the iPhone, that demo that you were doing there side-by-side, the difference in video quality was so dramatic between the browser and the app. The browser was so much better.
Yeah. Now let's take a look at if we can single out Kiki's Droid.
Right now I've got it in the high quality, and it's... going pretty well. It's nice.
You can't do a single. Kiki.
I can. Whoop.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I've got the high playing on high quality through the YouTube app on my Droid, and it's playing pretty nicely. It loaded really fast, and if I go to I can watch it also in normal quality, which is a substantial difference once it actually gets down. So it's taking a while.
Yeah, but Becky, did you say that you can't do high quality on the iPhone? Because I see the button right there. You can just click on high or HQ, and then it jumps to it.
I wasn't seeing it in there at all. I was definitely seeing that when I was looking for it, I wasn't seeing HQ. So it must have just been. It may have been just my experience. But
on
that
the
was
mobile
some of
the or on the app?
On the mobile.
On the mobile, you could.
Yeah. There's a big button.
Mine's there right now.
I was looking for it earlier.
Yeah, it may not have been there.
Just, you know what it was? I was watching Double Rainbow.
Double Rainbow isn't available.
And
in
I got
high
a little
quality.
Bit excited. Yeah. I just couldn't. Yeah, if you have missed the Double Rainbow meme on YouTube, it's well worth a minute and 45 seconds of your life.
All right, but hold on until the end of the show. Please hold your Double Rainbow viewing until the end of Tech News Today. FaceTime-capable iPod Touch could be coming by the end of this year. Rob Hennessy is the audio and telecom buyer for UK retail giant John Lewis, and he said at a company event that the iPod Touch would be coming and would have a flash 5-megapixel camera, HD video recording, gyroscope, and would be capable of doing FaceTime. Is he right?
Well, when contacted about this, the company, John Lewis, the retailer in the UK, said he was just speculating. Yeah, he said that. But of course, we don't have any inside knowledge.
Yeah, he said that. But he's a crazy man. He says all kinds of things. Well, you know what? You got to figure that if somebody comes out at a company meeting and starts saying all this stuff, that there's got to be an element of truth.
Especially if they use the word gyroscope.
He didn't think it was going to come out. Later. He didn't think, he didn't think anybody was going to leak this information. So at best, he's naive.
The guy should go chug down a few brews with our friend Gray Powell.
Yes. Facebook's got a new location feature coming. They have just acquired Next Stop. So this is going to be their entry into location-based social networking. At least someday, once they figured out what to do with it. Next Stop was founded by some ex-Googlers, and it's along the lines of Foursquares and Gowallas of the world, in that you can check in on places and it geolocates you and gives you recommendations. But you're playing around with it, Becky, and you said it seemed to be a little more travel-oriented.
Well, I was just reading up on it, and if you go to the Next Stop site, it's completely dead. It basically says we've been acquired, we're shut down. But in looking at some of the screens from some of the apps that are there. It looks a little bit more, less like a club, less like a membership, and more like a travel app that would help you based on where you are to decide what to do. So I think that could be really cool with Facebook if they tie it into what your friends think are cool in an area that you may or may not have been to before.
And you could go, they could go any kinds of way with it. I mean, they could take that geolocation goodness and just stick it into Facebook and make it part of your Facebook apps and your mm-hmm. you know, when you're logged on and allow you to geolocate. But do we want Facebook to do that?
Do we trust it to?
Yeah.
That's the question. Right.
I mean, how much more do they need to know about me? How much more do I want to let them know about me? Because I can see this being really cool. It's like my Facebook app could be my Foursquare.
Yep.
As long as I trust that only my friends are going to see this information and not everyone else in the world.
Yeah. Do we have any idea how long? We know that Nextstop has been phased out and they're starting to phase it into Facebook. Do we know?
Well, they just acquired it today. So I'm guessing we've got to wait for those questions to be answered. Nextstop wrote in their fact that pursuing our mission to help people discover the world around them was something that could be done with greater impact and scale as a part of Facebook. So, no, they have no idea what's going to happen.
No clue.
Yeah.
One thing they did say that if you are a member of Nextstop and you have these guides set up, you have to export them by September 1st. So they've got some export tools up there so that you can get all your data out.
All right. Time for a 3D update in 3D. Look at that. See? It's my
like
hand.
Your hand is real.
Everywhere.
Wow.
All right. Let's wing through these. 3D TV sales are up due to the World Cup. Becky, why is that?
Anytime there's a big sporting event, they say that there's a huge uptick in sales of TVs. And overall, the Omnicom Media Group says that 10% of people surveyed in this massive survey they did in 15 countries, 10% said they're going to buy a new TV for the World Cup. And Samsung is saying they're seeing the results of that type of buying play out in 3D TVs. So let me give you the context.
Yeah, what's
in the
numbers?
Last 5 months, they sold 5,000 3D TVs.
So around 1,000 a month. All right. That's low.
In the first 2 weeks of June, just in 2 weeks, they sold 6,000 3D TVs. They say they're going to sell 10,000 by the end of June. That's what they estimated they've sold. And, they say that this has been a definite uptick for them in people's perception and awareness about 3D TVs.
Also, Sony is reported, according to the Register, to be preparing a 3D TV upgrade for their PS3 television tuner, the Play TV. Not sure if this will be a firmware upgrade or require you to buy new hardware. Probably going to require you to buy new hardware. Adobe is going to add 3D graphics into the mix for Adobe Flash. This was reported by Stephen Shanklin at CNET from the Adobe Max conference in October. They plan to unveil their agenda. The agenda for that conference actually says that Flash Player 3D Future will be on the agenda, so we'll find out a little more about that in October. And that's it for the 3D roundup.
What do you think Adobe's strategy for 3D in their player is? I mean, is this gaming?
Games.
Is this
gaming? Yeah, totally games. That's what I think.
Right now, it's basically you have like a 2D character that can maybe move around in a 3D space for some of their games, but it would be would behoove them to put full 3D capability into some of their more of their games.
Quake Arena in Flash.
Yeah.
That's like the hello world of porting games to things. Twitter is now the world's fastest growing search engine, according to Fast Company's Austin Carr. He said co-founder Biz Stone spoke yesterday at the Aspen Ideas Festival and said that Twitter searches now reach some 800 million search queries per day. That's over 24 billion searches per month, more than Bing and Yahoo combined. And he divines from this that based on what Biz Stone said at the Twitter Developer Conference a few months ago, that they're growing faster than Google. Can I believe this? This is unbelievable.
I don't know about
who
that.
Who do you
Tom?
Believe and where are the numbers?
Wait a minute. What's the problem?
There's a little problem. So you know all those apps we're using on our mobile devices like Twitterific and TweetDeck? They all make these calls, these API calls, all the time to update your feed. Now, all of those calls that are automated are being counted in the search results. That skews the results and inflates them. Massive.
Okay, so this number is meaningless at this point then.
Pretty much. Not so much. Yeah. I mean, there's a value in the Twitter search. There's a value in real-time information. But I think this is a major miscue on what the data actually tells us.
Yeah, it's like comparing apples and Microsofts. It's totally two different things. Twitter search is, I want to see what people are talking about right now. Google search is, I want to find something on the internet. And granted, you can find what people are talking about on Twitter on Google. In their little live search thingy there that pops up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even think Twitter is aiming for Google. That's just good headline writing.
It's very good headline writing. And even with all this said, it's the difference between who is spinning what. So Ev Williams versus Biz, are they both working off the same numbers? What Ev said a few months ago, was that based on the same numbers? Is Biz talking off of new data? We don't know that.
Right. And then throw into the mix this Fast Company guy taking Biz's quote and turning it into something that Biz, I don't even know what Biz actually said at the conference. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wait, I have
we
to
are
give
king
you
of the
Biz.
World. No.
He practically did say that, though, at this Sun Valley conference today. So let me give you the quote that he busted out at this Sun Valley conference.
This is different than the Fast Company quote.
No, this is totally different, but it just goes along the vein of overinflating the importance of Twitter.
All right.
You got to listen to this. This is dumb. I hope people will see Twitter not as a triumph of technology, but as a triumph of humanity. Huh?
Wow.
He at least avoided saying a triumph of the human spirit.
Oh, that's true.
Or human will. He could have gone all Nietzsche on us.
You know what? He is kind of in that same vein as the guy who's looking at the double rainbow. He's having the same experience, I think.
Yes. If you haven't watched it, you're going to have to. It's part of your cultural literacy. I've got some more news on the Russians. It's all 1983 and it's the Cold War. More news on the Ruskies. Nokia.
They didn't talk like that in 1983.
Sure they did, when they were pretending to be from 1920. Nokia 6 Russian police on the blogger with the prototype phone. This is a blogger who had gotten a hold of a Nokia N8 and had previously posted to his blog all about it. Nokia had posted saying, you know, we don't like this, and why is everyone all excited about this iPhone getting stolen when our stuff got stolen in Russia? Yeah. The journalist is Eldar Murtazin, editor-in-chief of mobilereview.com, and the Russian police have showed up on his door asking for the Nokia N8.
I don't think I'd want the Russian police to show up on my door.
No.
No.
Send me the San Jose task force any day over
exactly.
the Russian police.
Nokia said, we have asked Murtazin for the return of all Nokia property in his possession. As he has declined to reply, we ask the Russian authorities to assist it. We leave it to them to determine the most appropriate course of action.
Ooh.
Wow.
In Russia, I don't know. You make the joke. Fill in your own joke there. Something does it to you. Done. Also, we're returning all of the Russian spies that we caught. Because of, spying on their, using their Wi-Fi and their little tech tricks that we've talked about a couple weeks ago on
Training
TNT.
Them,
yeah, we're, this is, I don't know, this is one of those 10 for 4 deals. We're only getting 4 spies back. We're giving them 10. So the only way this makes sense
we're getting 4 really good spies.
I was going to say, Russian spies must have been minor leaguers.
Yeah.
Or maybe we're getting some spies to be named later.
It's a good swap. Who knows? It's been 24 years since they've done a spy swap like this. But
it's about time.
The geeky Russian spies going home, and maybe they learned a few. They'll be consultants in security and technology there soon enough.
And let's finish up with a story that tells the tale of the triumph of the human spirit.
Yes.
No.
This is the solar-powered plane that attempted to fly 24 hours through the night, through the dark, through the darkness of midnight of man's soul against the odds. And they made it. They landed safely after a 26-hour flight. They were able to stay high enough, glide enough, and have enough power stored in their batteries that they were able to finish the flight with 3 hours of battery time left.
Wow. They could have gone to another airport.
I know. They only flew to Switzerland. From where? From Great Britain? I think the plane touched down in Bern. I can't remember where they took off from, though. But they didn't go very far for flying that long. This is like the worst holding pattern ever. I hope that they gave free drinks to the people on board. No, there was nobody else on board.
It's a good proof of concept. What they needed to do was prove that the batteries, the storage technology that they had on hand was going to get them through the night, that they'd make it through, and that they would be one, in doing so, they'd be one step closer to the eventual goal of circling the globe only using the power of the sun.
Yeah. So we got perpetual flight?
Perpetual flight, maybe. I mean, this is one step in the path, but it's not there yet. But it's definitely a possibility.
All right.
If you're not watching the video, if you're just listening, so we've been watching video of this amazing plane landing, and it's huge, and it's coming down onto the runway, and there's a van following it on each side of its wing. And then there was a dude on a bicycle right under the wing. Was that helping anyone to land the plane? What was that about?
I'll just keep pedaling.
They have different laws in Switzerland. Bikes get to use airplane runways. It's a share the road thing.
Okay, I just wondered if anyone had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, this plane is pretty amazing. Made of carbon fiber. It has an onboard computing system to make it more efficient in its energy consumption. Solar panels that line the tops of the wings. The wingspan itself is 61 meters, a weight of 1,500 kilograms, so very light in the scope of things. And it can go to an altitude of 8,500 meters, top speed of 70 kilometers per hour. Let's hope they can make it faster.
A little faster might be good. That's why they limited it to Switzerland. Yeah, that's the next thing, though, right? As a global circumnavigation.
Right. And it could take, if going at 70 kilometers an hour, that'll take a while.
They'll get passed by old ladies in Cessnas.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure out the speed thing, the pilot who's piloting this thing, how the pilot's going to sit there in that little tiny cockpit for how long?
Yeah.
To go around the globe?
We'll go from in-flight refueling to in-flight crew transfer. Yeah.
Exactly. We'll trade off.
All right, let's move on to take a look at what's on the calendar.
Yeah, a couple interesting things. There was a leak of T-Mobile's release of phones, their calendar for the year, what they're planning on releasing. Now, this is not verified by T-Mobile. It's just a leak. And the interesting things, the Samsung Vibrant, it looks like it's July 21st. The HTC Vanguard, September 9th. And this sounds interesting. The HTC Schubert, or Schubert, depending on how you wish to say that.
It's Sherbet.
Sherbet. I had that down at Friendly's. The lime is fantastic. Pegged for November 17th. And so that's kind of an interesting, if you're a T-Mobile person thinking about updating and upgrading your phone, new info on what phones will be coming out. And then Samsung Captivate coming out on AT&T July 18th. It'll cost $200. That's coming down the pike. And finally, this is just a little tidbit for those of you who are ex-Tech TV folks, as we are, fans and participants. Jim Goldman, who was a big Silicon Valley bureau chief at Tech TV and then went on to be the Silicon Valley bureau chief.
We should say CNBC. He was Silicon Valley bureau chief and was also the entire bureau.
Yeah, he was. That's right. He was the bureau. But then he went on to be bureau chief in Silicon Valley for CNBC and got into quite a few interesting scrapes and typical stuff that they do on that kind of...
Well, the most famous was the Steve Jobs health when they announced Steve Jobs was temporarily stepping down. He got into some boiling water over that.
Yes, right. But he has decided to leave CNBC, and he's going to go work for a PR firm. And John Fort from Fortune magazine is going to be replacing him. So congratulations to Jim on a new gig, and can't wait to hear the backstory.
All right, on to the voicemail. Our caller today gets a little Solomonic on self-driving cars.
Sarah, I need just a little bit longer than that to pull up the other webpage. Okay, here it comes. It's coming. Volume up.
We'll be here.
Hey, TNT, it's Steven. So just in response to your discussion about the self-driving cars, wouldn't a car that has a automatic driving mode and a manual driving mode answer both people's questions or problems with the car? So you could have an automatic mode for your commute and then a manual mode when you just want to go for a drive. Love the show. Thanks. Bye.
I like it. I like the compromise.
Sure. An automatic mode where you just... you have your Bloody Mary and it drives you to work, and then
wait, no, I think he was saying
manual when you want to go drive it. So something that actually turns off the computer.
But then we need different roads, like, you know, we need rules about when you can be in manual and when to be in when you have to be in automatic.
Right.
Because then some crazy guy is in manual during commute time and everybody else is in automatic and he's causing all kinds of havoc.
Saturdays and Sundays, all bets are off.
Yeah. there are manual lanes and automatic. Oh, maybe that's the way we do it. Mm-hmm. It's like carpool. Mm-hmm. You start having an automatic lane. Automatic cars are allowed in the carpool lane. And then like fast track, you start, now there's two automatic lanes. And now there's three. And if you're driving manual, you get stuck over there in the right lane. Sorry if that's
and
what you want to do.
After a while, it makes you very sad and upset.
No, because you get an automatic.
Oh.
And then you're not sad and upset anymore. If you insist on driving a manual car, or you just can't afford one of those automatic cars, then you're screwed.
Or you can take back roads.
Yeah.
The windy back roads.
Which nobody's on anymore because everyone's on the automatic freeway.
Right.
All right. I'm getting it.
Good.
On to the emails. Our first one comes today from Harry. And he represents several people who have written in and called about our talk about Real ID from Blizzard. This is the idea that when you post on the Blizzard forums from now on, you have to use your real name. Harry says, I'm writing in response to that. While I believe the solution will cut down on trolling, I believe it will also cut down on all forum use, effectively killing the official forums for anything useful and causing people to go to non-official forums for all their gameplay-related needs, which also serves to limit the responses that Blizzard will hear from the community on real problems. One potential solution would be to simply link forum accounts to a single paid user account with one universal name, as opposed to the current system where users can post as any of their characters. If people are forced to associate their true in-game identity with their trolling, it will cut down on malicious posts through fear of in-game ramifications such as ostracization, and by having one name associated with the account will allow the community to accurately identify trolls without fear of releasing one's true identity, which can more easily lead to out-of-game harassment and effects on one's real life, such as forum posts being indexed by Google and found by potential employers.
Okay, is that my sense is I just didn't understand the ramifications that were possible and people's, is it just a culture of privacy or are there real ramifications to having your name publicly associated with negative comments? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, most of the fears have been, most of the reasonable fears, there's people mm-hmm. who are like, yeah, they'll find me in the game and they'll harass me all the time and they'll come to my house and murder me. The real reasonable fears here are that you would be harassed and probably mm-hmm. over the internet harassed. There could be people who, to get back at you for something that you said, you know, you said something about the Alliance that they didn't like and they got really upset and then they go and they, you know, find out your identity and take all the money out of your bank account or something like that. I mean,
but it could extend if they know your real name, they can find out more information about you, and it could extend
to
being stalked or having your house toilet papered or worse. And those are concerns.
Those are valid concerns. Mm-hmm. The thing is, you don't have to post on the forum. This,
right.
I think a lot of confusion is like, I want to play this game and they shouldn't be giving away my real name if I play this game. You can play the game without giving away your real name.
Right.
You can't post on their forums without giving away your real name once this goes into effect. And the idea there is that you will have to live with the consequences of what you say and you'll have to be more polite. And that's why I supported it when I first saw this. But I have to say, Harry makes a pretty compelling argument here that doesn't necessarily mean that Blizzard shouldn't do it, but mm-hmm. it will dampen the community quite a bit. Because when you are worried about what someone will react to when you post on the forums, you're much less likely to post something. And that means you're much less likely to be honest about complaints or things of a nature that you want to get across to the Blizzard folks, or even just get discussed with other Blizzard users if you're worried that someone's going to react negatively.
Yeah, forums are also searchable by search engines like Google, and if your name is associated with comments in a forum like the Blizzard forum, that can come up in an ego search, or you know, a search by an employer, a potential employer, or you know, someone who maybe wants to date you.
Yeah, right.
I can't speak to the in-game experience and the ramifications in-game, but when it comes to overall posting, I think you can make the most serious allegations and say them with such force, but do it politely
mm-hmm.
and do it in a way that even if an employer or someone, you know, that was your future father-in-law was researching you, at least they would say, hey, that's a valid point. And they express themselves passionately, but politely. I don't know. Right. That's just my two cents.
So I still think that it's not as devastating and awful as a lot of people are making it out to be, that they're requiring a real name. Just posting on the internet using your real name is not a death sentence. And a lot of people are reacting that way. But, you know, I'll give Harry credit for bringing up a good point. This may really gut the amount of participation in the Blizzard forums. We'll have to see. There may be plenty of people out there that don't fear this and will continue to participate. But it will definitely change the makeup of that audience.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, something else we've gotten a lot of feedback about is this story about iTunes accounts being hacked. People have had lots of thoughts about weak passwords, about how widespread this is. So I just wanted to read one, and Tom, you have one. So let me read this about that issue right now. It's from Paul, the security-loving Brit in Hawaii. And he says, isn't it about time we just switched over to forcing secure passwords on users? Ease of use and security rarely go hand in hand. And all of these services that allow easy passwords just exacerbate the problem, especially when you consider how many people use the same password everywhere. Yes, support costs will likely increase, but bad rep is far more expensive. So, I mean, he makes his point. He makes the counterpoint. When I was first reading this, I'm like, you know, none of these business models are set up to facilitate people having lost passwords all of the time, which is what happens when you mandate really good passwords. So he makes the point and counterpoint. I don't know.
I think he's got an idealistic reaction that a lot of people who are in charge of security have, which is, you know what, we shouldn't be forgiving about this. The problem is, if you make them use these heavy passwords, they may end up doing other breaches, like writing them down on Post-it notes and sticking them on their computer.
Yeah.
So there does have to be a balance there. But I think overall, I agree with him, which is, you know what, we do need to enforce a little more security in how people pick passwords for important mm-hmm. things, for sure. Maybe not for, you know, just signing up for any old Web 2.0 service, but definitely for things where you've got valuable information, like your banks and Facebook.
Facebook. Loved how you put that in there.
Next one comes from Michael in Toronto. Says, a few months ago, I bought my wife a Griffin car mount and enough iTunes gift cards for her to get a navigation app for her iPhone. Very nice. Never would have occurred to me that the iTunes gift cards could not be used for app purchases. Fortunately, I had no problem. The gift cards were purchased at Staples at face value with no sales tax added. When I loaded them into her iTunes account to purchase the app, Canadian sales taxes were added to the purchase at that time. Just thought you should know all is well with iTunes gift cards here in the Great White North. We got several emails along the same nature. So you can use the gift cards to buy apps. However, Becky, you pointed out in our prep meeting, they can still, if they hack into your account, use your gift card balance.
Right. So one of the ways to protect yourself that we thought, okay, well, if you use a gift card, at least they can only max out your gift card. One person had a gift card and a credit card tied to their account. It got his account got hacked. He got the charges reversed on the credit card, but Apple wouldn't credit back all of the gift card that he had lost. So I just think this is really interesting, and I'm still wondering how widespread this iTunes hacking is, because we got a lot of people saying that they had fraudulent activity on their accounts.
And we got one final email, Kiki.
Yep, one more, just a follow-up. And this is why my account being hacked worries me, from Spartacus. My password was in another language, possibly a dead one, and has some numbers scattered randomly through it. I don't log on to secure stuff on public Wi-Fi, so this isn't just a dictionary attack.
And of course, if you heard the other day, Spartacus wrote in and said that his iTunes account had been hacked.
Yep.
And so we were speculating, you know, pretty easy to get into people's accounts. But Spartacus, dead language could be subject to a dictionary account. They will put all kinds of languages, including Latin and possibly, Welsh isn't quite dead yet. But, you know, you'd be surprised what are in these dictionary attacks sometimes. Numbers scattered randomly through it, though. I mean, if you were putting threes for E's and fours for H's, that can be subject to a dictionary attack because they know about leet speak. Mm-hmm. These hackers, they do. But if they really are random, then yeah, that's a good tough password. Not that it couldn't be brute forced, but it implies a more sophisticated attack, I guess.
Todd, I mean, Tom, I'm going to give you an opportunity to retract.
Tom.
You.
It's nice to meet you.
Todd. Todd, I'm going to give you an opportunity.
No problem, Betty.
That Welsh is dead. The chat room is inflamed. They're inflamed.
No, it's not dead.
It's not dead. Cockney is going to be dead in like 30 years, though. That story just came out.
I just wanted you to retract that.
Yes, I know. Thank you for allowing me to clarify.
Todd said that.
I clarify. I said, well, it's not dead, but Welsh. And now they're cursing me out in Welsh.
In Welsh, yes.
I consider it an honor to be cursed out in Welsh.
Blame Todd.
All right, that's it for Tech News Today. I'm Todd Merritt. Thanks to Betty Worley and Dr. Kiki for joining me. Thanks to you guys for watching. You can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. We'll see you later.